All right, it's my turn to say good morning.
Good morning.
I was joking with Matthias that today's the kind of day where I could say hello to each of you by name, for which I am grateful. So I'm Lana Aberto, and I was asked to share with everybody about my experience being the representative delegate, a voting person, at the General Assembly for Unitarian Universalists this year. And before I do that, I'm going to start with a quote from Brian Stevenson, who was the Ware Lecture guest this year. He requested that his time at the microphone not be recorded. There's no video. It was, you had to be there. So the quote that I am sharing is from the UU World article about his talk. And there are four essential things that we must do to create a more just and equal world, Stevenson told the UUs. Get proximate to the poor, excluded, neglected, and abused. Change the narratives that underlie racism and other inequalities. Stay hopeful about creating justice and be willing to do uncomfortable things. So for people that aren't familiar with what a General Assembly is, it's something that goes from Wednesday to Sunday at the end of June every year. So this is 5 days of workshops and socializing. There's a wonderful young adult and youth track where they do things like make mandalas and play games together. It's just a great big, when we had it in Portland, it was 5,000 people gathering. I don't know what the numbers were this year, but you get the idea of the size. They usually take over the largest convention center in whatever town they're in. So that means there was a lot of information for me to choose from in terms of what to share with you all. And what I decided to do is I'll share a little bit of the headline news, but what I really want to get into is my personal take on the experiences that I had. And to be clear, I attended online. So I did all of this sitting at my dining room table. Some of the highlights were the election of the first ever female president of our association. That would be Susan Frederick Gray. And we had three female candidates to choose from. So either way, we're gonna get a lady this year. There was a beautiful memorial for Jim Key, who passed away just a week or two before the start of General Assembly, and so his absence was strongly felt, and he was honored with an empty chair on stage, which I found very moving. The highlight, and I think I sent out a link to this performance. The highlight for me was a performance of something called the Ruby Bridges Suite, which honored a very young activist during the civil rights movement, and the way that is original music written by a Unitarian Universalist music director, and it involved spoken word, pieces of poetry, read headlines, and lots of images. So if you didn't get that link the week in June when I shared it, please let me know and I'll send it again if enough people are interested. The other headline is, it's a service project that was chosen, and that's kind of what we do, like a special collection, but at the General Assembly level in size. So this year, the service project was went to an organization called the Friends of Louisiana's Incarcerated Children, and that's work that serves, can you believe it, children who've been incarcerated. And apparently in Louisiana, this number is worthy of addressing. So there are enough children that are in the criminal justice system that need people to reach out to them and support them, and our faith stood behind that this year, which I also find moving. So to get to the pieces that spoke most to me, as a delegate, If anyone has ever done this, and I know some people from YEAST have served as delegates, you understand that this is, it's an opportunity to vote in what they call general sessions, where amendments and statements are put forward. It's really political and kind of nap-inducing to sit through some of these sessions. They go on for like up to 4 hours, and there's a pro mic and a con mic and a procedural mic, and oh my gosh, you love that procedural mic. You love to ask about the rules and how to change them, which is cool, but it's work. So it was really beautiful that this year, going into this GA, we knew it was going to be unique. It was chosen to be in New Orleans so that it could be unique. And on top of that, some of you remember that the president of the UUA, Peter Morales, stepped down just days ahead of this. And so what happened in between was the appointing, again, unprecedented, of 3 individuals to serve as president. And Peter Sinkford, who you know, was our president previously. Leon Spencer is a lay member of the faith and the first lay person to serve as president. And Sophia Betancourt, minister, but first appointed female president of the UUA. These are 3 African Americans. And they opened up the general sessions. They came together and stood side by side on stage. And just that vision alone said so much. And they each are skilled at speaking from the heart and understanding their role as not elected, but very, very much needed and wanted as our presidents. And that set the tone for me for what kind of GA this was going to be. And throughout this GA, there were members of Black Lives of UU, there were our presidents on stage, there was African American representation at almost every minute. And I'll say almost to the point that I kind of giggled now and again, because they just made sure that there was a Black person by that microphone every minute of this GA. So that's how it started out. They performed the pouring of libations. I'm not sure how many of you are familiar with that, but that is an African tradition of honoring ancestors by pouring, now people use water, but it could be any sort of holy liquid, and pouring into a vessel for ancestors who are named. And after every name, they're honored with an affirmation of Ashe. And so this is something that I'm only recently familiar with, but to see again, you know, thousands of people in the same room together practicing this new tradition to them, really moving and very beautiful. So there was a strong willingness to be open to changes in GA, and I could see people really stretching themselves to be inclusive and to celebrate in ways that might have been new. We have our banner parade every year, and New Orleans has a reputation for throwing parades. And we got a UU parade. We got the costumes, we got headdresses and feathers and sequins and colors and drumming and dancing down the aisle. It was really beautiful to behold. And it was fun to see, you know, people in their UU gear getting down. It was really exciting. So as a delegate, part of my role was to consider 2 amendments and 3 responsive resolutions. This is the work that I did throughout the week. The 2 amendments that came up were in regards to our principles and really getting to the heart of who we are, seven principles which we're founded on. The First Amendment involved, and I'm forgetting which principle this came from, but in one of them we talk about being inspired by persons. And there was a motion to change this to beings and kind of expand the definition from just people to beings, which is interesting. However, this amendment, it led to a lot of debate. It was a very, very long discussion on this. And ultimately, this amendment was tabled indefinitely. We weren't able to move forward on this because there's so much, it's very hard to decide to do this when not every person is honored equally in this choice to whether to move beyond honoring people to honoring all beings. We've decided to pause and consider this longer. So that was not adopted. The other amendment was to change the wording of being inspired by prophetic men and women. That language was changed from men and women to people. And that brought forth a lot of non-binary folks in favor. And it brought them sort of out of the shadows and up to the microphones to say, this will make me feel more included. Let's change the word to people and just get all of us and not have men and women and have that be the end of it. And that was passed. That was passed resoundingly. We were all able to stand behind that. So that's kind of a door that's been opened to this segment of our population here in the church. One particular moment that stood out to me in this process was around the adoption of one of these resolutions on economic inequality. There are documents called statements of conscience, that are not adopted every year, but they're written and adopted when we feel like there's a need to say something and take a stand on an issue. And, you know, we will joke about what do you use stand for? Is it anything that we want? It's not. if you want to know what we stand for, I recommend going back and reading through some of these statements of conscience. The last one that I remember was around, I hadn't written this down, I hope I get it right, but First Nations people and rights to their land and recognizing that we live on borrowed land. And that was something that YU surrounded around at the time. And that was the first awareness that I had around a statement of conscience and how it relates to our faith. So this year we're addressing economic inequality, and it's this long two-page document, and we have the opportunity, it's been written already, but we have the opportunity to make comments and make changes and make sure that it really represents what we feel about economic inequality. And it touched upon how race is related to this, how healthcare is related to this, how gender is related to this, how immigration status is related to this, and it was just this really dense document, and it brought up a lot of debate. And the moderator for this session was a gentleman by the name of Greg Boyd, who I've had the honor of meeting in person. He's a friend of one of my friends, and he's just this warm, happy guy. You want to be his friend when you meet him. And it turns out he's an awesome moderator. He really, really came with the whole rule book memorized, knowing his stuff, answering every question, so many procedural questions. And one of the things that happened was 3.5 hours into one of these sessions, 3.5 hours, there are still people at the pro mic and still people at the con mic and still people at the procedural mic, and we're kind of getting tired of this, even me sitting at my computer. And there came a point where someone came forward and wanted to propose closing debate on this amendment. Let's just stop arguing about this. Let's stop going back and forth. It's getting tiresome. Let's move forward and end the debate. And a vote to end debate was very quickly taken. And there was a little pushback from the online community who felt like there was a lag and a delay in when we're allowed to click on our votes and when the votes closed in the real space in real time. So it didn't go exactly perfectly smoothly well. And Greg was able to say, you know, we have a majority even without these online votes, and they were tallied eventually, but it's still, the vote is called and that's done. So this led to one woman coming up to the procedural mic, and this was her question. Her question was, is there anywhere in our process that requires fairness? And she went on for her reasons, you know, there's somebody here and he feels unheard, and so I want to know, you know, is it part of our process that we be fair with one another? And I watched Greg, and you could see that he's tired because he's been answering so many procedural questions. And I wouldn't guess that he would be in a position to answer this question. I mean, I felt like, gosh, you know, what a thing to land in your lap. What a thing to have to answer to as a representative of our faith. You know, does our process require fairness? So, with a big smile on his face, he said, I don't want to be glib, but this is the structure of white supremacy. It doesn't value fairness. It values efficiency. And this is something that we've all decided to do together. Talking about our process, our use of Robert's Rules of Orders. So that in and of itself, for me, a very young black man, speaking very directly to a room of thousands of Unitarian Universalists, saying, no, the process that we've chosen isn't fair. It's a tool of supremacy. I sat back in my chair. And the reason why I want to come back and talk about this is actually about what happened next in my online chat. So I'm sitting there like, wow, Greg, you know, say it. And in my online chat, somebody made the comment, wow, I never considered that about Robert's Rules of Orders. And then I almost fell out of my chair because my perspective is so different. I had never heard of Robert's Rules of Orders until I'd already been vice moderator. And then I stepped into being moderator, and I still had this itchy feeling that I was missing something. And it turns out it was this rule book. So I went to the library, and I checked out Robert's Rules of Orders for Dummies, and I studied it. And the very first thing that I had come up about it was the realization that this is how power is hoarded. And I wondered, you know, why was I never introduced to this? If I had ever showed up at a city council meeting, at an educational board meeting, anywhere, I would not be heard. I don't know these rules. They're exclusionary. And I could see immediately, you know, this is how power is kept. And as somebody who likes getting things done, I'm fine picking up, you know, these rules and using them to get work done. That's fine with me. But I do recognize the limiting scope and the exclusion that they create. And so I recognize that just coming in. And here's someone speaking from, I can say he's much older, I can't say anything else about him because I didn't know him in person. But it just blew me away that he could be familiar with this system and never to have recognized that this is a tool of power. But it was good for me to see that, because it was a reminder of all the different perspectives that we're going to come across as we dive into this work of dismantling racism together. And Another message that came up again and again and again at this GA was that this will be painful. It already has been painful. There was some of the people who had been present at the 1968 General Assembly, where Black people walked out because of the debates around whether or not to fund an all-Black organization, branch of UUism, they came back. And he said, you know, this does feel like coming home, and we see what the church is doing, making really big strides and efforts and gestures to plant the flag and say we're standing with Black people, we're doing it now. We do it recognizing that there are unhealed wounds here, and we're revisiting them. But the way that this was done at this General Assembly was really positive and inspiring for the most part. But we're UUs, so we fly our own flags. We can be passionate. And when we're acting from our individual sense of justice, we make different choices. So one of the things that I also want to talk about that happened at this GA, it's a little painful. And I want to say from the outset that I'm still struggling to find how I feel about the choice that a group called DRUM, which is Diverse and Revolutionary UU Ministers, this is an organization comprised of ministers of color, they held their own track, which was a series of workshops that were open only to people of color and were designed as a space to be free from whiteness. And this is part of their calling, this is part of their vision, and what they're passionate about is to see what UUism looks like absent from white culture. So the way that they're doing this is by embracing one another. And these are ministers, I attended one of their sessions when they were here in 2015, so I know that they are Japanese and Hawaiian and Chinese and Japanese American and African American, to name a few of the people of color representations there. And I was quite comfortable to sit with them in their session when they were here in 2015. I am a little surprised that they went so far as to create a space that was designed to exclude white people. I think that it's an interesting experiment, and I'm curious to see what this looks like going forward. But I also recognize at this GA that it led to hurt feelings for the white people who see themselves as allies, for people who identify as a person of color and don't look like it, to be turned away at the door for, you know, pale skin, basically. It doesn't matter if you have Jewish heritage or some other non-European, you know, if you look pale, they turned you back at the door. So this happened at this General Assembly. So again and again, we're called to begin this work. I think just the phrase dismantling racism, it's something that we want to do individually. I think when we turn on the news and when we watch ourselves react to someone else's race, or we watch somebody react to our race, we wish that we could move past and beyond this. And we can't do it by ourselves. And nationally, we recognize the need. If we don't do this work, we're going to be a very unhappy country. And this General Assembly this year, we're called within our smaller selves of being UUs and being church members to take on this huge undertaking that I think that all of us who live in America right now, maybe beyond, recognizing to be done. I am grateful that I have this community to hold my hand as I take these steps, because I'm a learner myself. I don't know how to engage with white people about racism, but I'm really happy to learn alongside everybody here. And for all the discussions that we've had so far, I'm so encouraged and so honored by statements like, I know that I need to know more. I know that I need to listen. I'm here to learn. So encouraging. And I really look forward to hearing that more and more, and the conversations that I've had so far. There's tension. And there will be tension. And there will be disagreements. And there will be hurt feelings. But here at Y East, our covenant calls us back to stumble and heal one another and begin again. So I know that's going to happen. One last little piece, and it kind of ties in, and I didn't make myself tie this talk together with a pretty bow. So you may leave with a feeling of discontentment. But that's what happened to GA. Two members whose names, again, I apologize, I didn't write down, but one of them, Tim, was a facilitator for our online community. Tim and one other gentleman were beaten and mugged on their way home, on their way back to their hotel rooms at the end of one of the evenings of General Assembly, and they were both taken to the hospital. And the following day, a prayer was given, and this being UU culture, a prayer was given for both the victims of this attack and the attackers. And while these two people were still in the hospital, thousands of UUs were praying that their attackers would be justly dealt with. And prayers given in their honor as well. So that's how we live, and that's how we operate as UUs. We're in a dangerous world. We're doing hard work, and we're extending our compassion and our hands in a full circle. So thank you for sharing these memories with me. And thank you for the opportunity to be a part of this General Assembly. Thank you to the members here who made that possible, and thank you to the UUA in general who were so active and specific in facilitating people of color to be here this year. Let's go ahead and sing a hymn together.